on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Very good evening to you all, wherever you may be. Welcome along to another edition of the Orient Hour. Joining me in the studio tonight is Darren Burrows. Good evening, Darren.
Good evening, Andy.
How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm well, Andy.
Yeah, I'm glad you got here on time as well. That's good. Always good to see.
Always try to do the best to get on time,
Andy. It would help, Darren, if I turned your mic up. How are you?
I'm well, Andy. I'm well. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Very good, mate. Anyway, let's cut to the chase here and let you know that Steve Tongue and also Barry Galvin were out yesterday and had a chat with the O's boss, Ross Embleton, and we're going to be bringing you that chat up in just a moment or two, and we'll be discussing it. Steve will be joining us afterwards, Darren.
I look forward to that. I look forward to the interview. I'm really looking forward to this, and it should be good.
It should be a good one, and I think Ross didn't hide away from any of the answers here, as he always doesn't, actually. He does answer everything, doesn't he?
Yeah, I'll give him credit for always fronting up. Yeah, and I hope he has fronted up, because I think it's important. I think that we've had a sticky patch, Andy, and we need to get through it.
Well, let's not hang around, shall we? Let's go straight to the interview, folks. It's what everyone's tuning in for, of course. And here's the O's boss, Ross Embleton, in conversation with our Steve Tongue and Barry Galvin.
Well, Ross, it'll be 2 weeks without a game come Saturday. What are the advantages or disadvantages of those two postponements, do you think?
I think sharpness is one. Obviously, you can never recreate what a game looks like. You know, however hard you train, however much effort you put in, it's not not the same circumstances. So sometimes that sharpness can go missing. I think ordinarily I would have said to you, if you'd have given me a 2 week window to not have a game, I would have been delighted. Bit your hands off in terms of being able to get out and do a lot of work on the training pitches. But with the weather, with the travelling that we have of, we have done in and around some of the postponements, it's obviously restricted us. So those are the not so good things, I suppose. It will come back around the other way pretty soon in terms of the game schedule. But when you pick up a few injuries, when you have a few people out, it gives you a real good chance to reassess some of those and see where we're at. And then when we have been able to get out and work the lads, we've been able to push them that little bit harder, because the games have been called off, you know, so we've been able to get some good realistic work, but probably not as much as I would have liked had you offered me the two week break in where we've had it.
Tell us a bit about the Carlisle trip, if you can bear to, and the fact that it was postponed so late.
Yeah, I'll be brutally honest with you. We got on the coach and we travel on two separate coaches now because all season pretty much because of COVID, and certainly the staff on my coach had very little faith in the fact that the game was going to be on. So I read one or two articles after the decision and the debacle had gone on about Carlisle had done certain things to try to get the game on, but we spoke to one or two people that we knew that were in and lived in the area. The snow was quite substantial around the time that we were leaving. Obviously, from our perspective and Carlisle's perspective, and they clearly wanted the game on. I think that was why we were in the position where we found ourselves to travel. But the closer we got to Carlisle, myself and some of the staff went for a walk, albeit 20 minutes or so from the ground on the Tuesday morning. And it was minus three then. So, as I say, between myself and the staff, we weren't very confident that it was going to go ahead. So when I got the call from Martin, went to the ground early to meet the referee, to meet the Carlisle staff. And when I got the call from him before the actual decision was made, it confirmed the fact that it wasn't looking like it was going to go ahead. So it was difficult because we'd come in on the Monday morning and we'd had a lot of snow, so we didn't really train. There was me and four or five of the staff outside with brooms and shovels trying to clear a little area to get the boys to run around safely on to call a training session before we travelled. Then obviously we travelled all the way up there, travelled all the way back. So it wasn't really till Wednesday that we were able to actually get out and do a little bit of work. And then you've got to be careful in terms of the injuries because of the distance and the time that people have been sat on their backsides.
And what's training been like? What have the pitches been like at the training ground?
We haven't been on the grass for probably nearly three and a half, nearly 4 weeks now. So obviously because of the rain to begin with, then obviously the snow hit and then the freezing conditions. Don't get me wrong, that's not me saying we haven't trained for that period of time. We've been fortunate enough that we've been able to hire the 3G facilities here and there to make sure that we can get some sessions in. But it's difficult once you do start trying to use artificial pitches with some players' injury history. You have to be careful of the fact of them training on that surface. And then, like I say, it just halts you because as soon as the snow comes, you can call it an all-weather pitch, but you're not allowed to actually get on there and train because the snow's covering them. So it makes it tough. But we've made the best of difficult circumstances, or we feel as though we have anyway.
Well, one of the advantages could be getting players fit who've had injury problems. How are we looking injury-wise ahead of Port Vale on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, not great. Obviously, we've lost in the recent while. I'm looking up at the board now just to make sure I don't miss anybody. But we had Leanne Gull, Ruel Sotiriou, who have looked quite severe in terms of the injuries that they picked up in recent times. So I wouldn't expect to see them certainly any time within the next few weeks. Craig Clay and Sam Lynn came off in the last games and they've not really taken part in a huge amount of training in this break. So that obviously leaves us vulnerable with regards to those two and the positions that they find themselves in. So frustrating. But then on the other side of that, it's given us a bit more time to get Danny Johnson a bit fitter and a bit sharper. I'd have liked to have done that in the games. I'd have liked to have given him some exposure at Carlisle and then Harrogate. But the next best thing is the fact that we haven't had to risk him like that. And he's been able to strengthen the areas that he's had issues with, and he'll be pushing very, very close to be involved at the weekend.
And the game itself, Port Vale have been on a pretty poor run, which probably explains, doesn't it? Well, they've just got a new manager literally this week in Daryl Clark from Walsall.
Yeah, I mean, when we went there and we got the result that we did, we didn't play particularly well on the day, but we put battling qualities on show and defended for our lives and come away with a valuable win at the time. They were on a very poor run then under John Askey, and we felt coming away that, they were in a very difficult period back then. I think John stayed on for a little bit of a period longer than that game, and then his tenure ended. And I know it's been one of those jobs, one of those positions that people have sort of been looking at, wondering if they would stick or twist with the people that were in there at the time. I must admit, very surprised in the change of Daryl leaving Walsall and going on to Port Vale. But, they're obviously sold him something that leads to him making that decision and moving up there. Daryl's a good guy. He's, he's obviously had a good start to his career in terms of what he did, certainly at Bristol Rovers. And when he left Walsall, I think anyone that had read it before they read that he'd gone to Port Vale were probably predicting that he was... he could potentially be going back there. So it'll be interesting. Makes it very difficult to predict what it's going to look like. Will they play a similar sort of formation that they have been? Will they change to what Walsall were doing when Daryl was there? That makes our job a little bit different, but it's all part of the process, and we've got to make sure we're ready for what comes our way at the weekend.
Well, it'll be interesting to know exactly which names Barry is reading out before the game from both teams then. Barry, come in.
Hi, Ross. Nice to see you again. Nice to see your face and not just the back of your head, which is what I've been looking at from the gantry for the last few weeks.
I'm glad you said from the gantry, Barry.
But, yeah, I mean, this, it's been, I'm stating the obvious, but it's been the strangest seasons of all seasons. We are there, we're in the stadium, we're watching the games. Luckily, fortunate enough to do so. A lot of people can't do that. But it has the atmosphere of kind of a training match, doesn't it? Because there's no crowds. And it's do you think it affects the players? Do you think they respond to, obviously they respond to the crowd. And if it affects them, how do you get them up for a game when there's no kind of atmosphere in the stadium?
I think the getting them up for the game comes throughout the week. So for example, today we start our preparations directly for Port Vale, you know, in terms of, you know, some tactical work and the way that we set out that we're going to look to try to play and hurt them at the weekend. And that process starts from the meeting that we have before training this morning. So I think getting people up for the game isn't necessarily the issue whilst you're in the changing room. When you're coming out, I think when you come out, like listening to Tijuana Taxi now just doesn't have the same effect because it's being played to an empty stadium. But I don't think that bit really demoralizes anybody or lessens the fact that you're going into a game. I think, or I'd like to think, that the players are going into that hungry to do well, focused on what their jobs are, what we're going to try to achieve as a team, etc., etc. It's, for me, it's the moments that are missing. It's the impact of the crowd, the momentum within games that I think is really missing. So, obviously, I'm very fortunate now that I have Dean Brill and Matt Harold, who are both on my staff. And albeit Matt's not with us every week as part of his role, he does opposition scouting. But when they are, they always talk about, they call it going down the hill. And I never really viewed our stadium as having any particular slope. We probably haven't got one. But going from the north stand to the south stand, they said when they played, they always felt like there was some sort of momentum going that way. And I think some of that is the fact that certainly since we've all been working together, there was always like a momentous finish to the way that we ended games. You know, even last year in what, again, was another incredibly surreal season, there were still like big moments where, I'm not saying it's just the South Stand, by the way, so anyone that don't sit in the South Stand, please don't take offence, but it's just the fact that we end up going that way. You know, I think if you looked at our record and broke it down, we scored, certainly the year we won the league, we seemed to score more goals at the South Stand end. So I think that it really started to pick everybody up. It's obviously a bigger, higher stand in terms of the way that it's set. So they always refer to it as going down the hill. And I know what they meant. And I think they're the things that are missing, Barry, is that when we're on top in a game, that builds even more, you know, that run of, you know, you see it a few times this year when, if you refer to the Newport game, when Joby put in that lung busting run to run away from a couple of players and to make a tackle, it gets everybody up off the stand. It gets a big feel around and it builds. And I think if you're, I know what it's like from going to Bradford on Tuesday. I've been there before. When the crowd picks up, it does have an impact on everybody. And sometimes it can be for the good and the bad. You know, you can go to an away ground and you go, right, come on, let's go out, be difficult to play against in the first 10, 15 minutes. This team are under a little bit of pressure. The crowd might turn against them. And then from our perspective, when you have those big moments, a shot at the goal, I felt like against Colchester at home, albeit we never peppered them with loads and loads of shots and chances at goal, I felt like we were on top and it was just lacking that bit of edge, bit more to drag us towards that pressure that putting the Colchester defender, the oohs and ahs that come from the crowd. That's the bit that's missing for me. And so I don't think necessarily it's dampened by anyone or anything. It's just that bit's missing.
Yeah. I think, as you say, when you're on top and you go close, you can hear the kind of buzz in the crowd, can't you? And it pushes you on that little bit further. That's what I was really asking you. So, I mean, regards our season so far, Ross, I think I'm right in saying that the objective at the start of the season is to improve on the previous season, which we've done. We're comfortably in the upper mid-table region at the moment. Would you say the objectives are you reasonably satisfied with where we are, or are we where you thought we would be at this stage of the season?
Yes, I think I thought this would be where I would... When I say hoped we would be, I don't mean that directly. I felt like... We have to take everything into consideration last year, Barry, as to what impacted the group and the club. We have to. But at the same time, taking all that into consideration, with the quality of what we had, the way the season panned out, albeit it ended short, we underachieved. So it was about us getting better this year. And I think we have. I think there's elements in the team that I see that have got better. So we focus more in terms of the way we defend when we're under a little bit of pressure or the game's not going in our favour. I think we've started to improve that. I think we score good goals, but I don't think we create as many chances as we would like. But I think that we've probably found ourselves in a position that I felt we would and should be in. But I do at the same time, and did at the same time at the start of the season, think that we have got enough quality to go beyond what I expected might be where we find ourselves, if that makes sense and explains to you well enough the answer to the question you just asked me.
Yeah. One more question from me at the moment, Ross. You've been a manager for some time now, and there's quite a few players been brought in, and the squad is quite different to the one that you inherited. Would you say you found it easier to manage now than you did at the time, having had to change roles so quickly and knowing the characters in the dressing room? Would you find that now there's been an amount of time and more players have been brought in from yourself and Martin, etc., that you find it easier, you've grown into it?
Yeah, I think that's part of it anyway, in terms of without the characters being brought into consideration in the first part of the answer, I would say that I've had an opportunity to discover what I am. And I would say that I've been able to discover that in the last year in terms of going into lockdown, coming out and what this season's looked like. It's been an odd, strange season. But at the same time, I have been able to learn a lot about myself and realise when I maybe have done things wrong, or I would look back on that I would do things differently. Probably from a man management side of things than anything else, because if the truth be known, before I come into this role, man management wasn't directly one of my responsibilities, if you like. It was, I always had the answer of if the manager would make a decision, I always had the answer of yeah, but, and then I could dress up the answer that was telling the players the truth, but almost putting it on them on their terms. Well, you can't always do that when you've got to be straight and honest with people. That has to change. I think certainly the answer to your question outright in terms of now bringing new players in is yes. I think it makes the whole thing more straightforward for me, because emotion, previous experience, relationships with players is very, very difficult, because you go from being, like I said there, the one that they can come to and have a moan and groan and a chat about their scenario for the good or the bad, and you can have that sort of on a level conversation with them, and then all of a sudden you're the one in charge and they're looking at you going, well, hold on a minute, we were having that this type of conversation, now you're not putting me in the team. So it becomes very, very difficult. But what I do at the same time respect is that it's also very, very difficult for those lads as well. Must be very, very tough for the players that, for some of them, I've worked with for nearly 4 years now, to go through that change with them. You know, players whose relationships I value and I've cherished and gone through a lot with. Football understanding and opinions being very, very similar to all of a sudden, you're not putting me in the team. It must be very difficult for them. So, definitely in terms of evolving the group and evolving the squad, it does make management that little bit more straightforward, if you like.
Yeah, excellent. Well, back over to Steve for a few more questions for you, Steve.
Yes, Ross, a lot of questions as ever from listeners and on the message boards. I'm going to bowl you one or two bouncers now, so get your helmet on.
No problem.
This one says, Why do you like 4-3-3 so much? It seems very quickly to become 4-5-1 and makes us very defensive.
I think 4-3-3 is the system that suits the players that we've got at this club the best. So when people say, why do I like it so much? It's not the formation that I would play if you gave me a blank sheet of paper and a total selection of the players that, you know, if you gave me a pool of players that I would go and pick as a group of players, it wouldn't be the formation that I would choose to play. But we toyed around with a number of different systems last year, and albeit the group is evolving and changing the way it is at the moment, we're still obviously very set in terms of the players that we've got at the club. So I look at the front players that we've got, I look at the types of midfield players, and that has to be taken into consideration. So if we pluck out a formation like 4-4-2, which I know is a system that a lot of people like seeing, I think there's a lot of difficult scenarios that can be posed against you defensively in a 4-4-2. And I think you have to be very athletic as a team in order to play that system appropriately and defend and attack appropriately to, you know, create chances and not concede. So I think that's a big part of why I choose that system for this group of players. I think also when you look at that, we tried to play a back three. Obviously, that was the system that got us over the line in the year that we won the league. But I think we all quickly noticed that once you step up, you have to play that system completely different in order to be successful with it. I would much prefer to have two out-and-out strikers at the top end of the pitch if I felt that was the way to go. But again, you have to take into consideration the types of strikers, the positions that our strikers or attacking players like to take up in our team and where they can be most effective. So that also has to be considered as well. And then I think, again, just I'm referring to 4-4-2 because I know it's a system that a lot of people talk about, but you have to have the players to fit that. And you know, I don't personally feel that we have that at the club right now in order to play. So I think right now that is a system that I feel suits the players the best. I know it's a system that, on the whole, the players that we've got here are most comfortable with. So I think that also has to be considered as well. I don't sign up to the... It can become quickly a 4-5-1. I don't really sign up to the fact that happens to us too often. I think it's about us trying to create the type of chances as a group and as a team to make us more effective going forward. That is something that we've worked on in the last couple of weeks. But I don't necessarily agree that we end up as a 4-5-1 formation, if I'm being brutally honest.
OK, this one says, when we take a 1-0 lead, we seem to just sit back and manage the game instead of going for a second goal.
I don't know. I'm not sure if I agree with that. I think for me, something that I touched off, it was Barry that asked me the question, first of all, was I think that we can be a bit more aggressive going forward. I think we can commit a little bit more in terms of creating opportunities to score more goals, 100%. I don't think we are carefree enough at time in the final third in terms of shots and balls into the box. So I think that is something that we have to improve. I think that's an attitude to go and commit to that and be willing to, you know, take risks and try things and don't be too worried by making an error or missing at times. So I think that's an attitude and a freedom that we've been trying to put into the group and the individuals of late. But I'm not really sure too much if I sign up to the fact that if we score, we don't really go to try and score again.
All right, we'll see if you sign up to this one. We sometimes seem to pass the ball around at the back and build up very slowly.
Yes, I agree with that, totally, 100%. It's not an intention that we set out to do it, though. And I think that what I would say is teams come... I sit down with most managers either after the game or have a chat on the phone because we're not allowed in too much face-to-face contact now. And I talked to them about what they think are our strengths, where they felt they could impact or beat us or score against us. And so many of them talk about how much they were worried about us breaking them down, about how comfortable we are on the ball. So they get a lot of men back behind the ball. So what then happens is all the space is in our half of the pitch. So a lot of the time we're waiting, moving the ball, trying to create opportunities to get the ball higher up, to create the chances that we want to score. So there's going to be moments where we have to pass the ball across the back, where we have to try to entice the opposition out, where we have to try and wear them down, where we need to try to create space and openings for us into being able to play forward passes and not just give the ball away. If we could get it and smash it in the box and cause and create chances by doing that, then of course we would do that. But again, we have to make sure that we are playing towards our strengths. So when a team comes and puts everyone back behind the ball, a lot of the time you have to try to create those openings rather than just giving the ball away and smashing it forward.
Well, that's interesting that you talk to other managers like that after the game. Have there been any particular influences on you during the course of your career and choice of style and tactics and so on?
When you say influences, you mean other people and managers and
people? Yeah.
I think a lot of the influences on me are people that have. No, I'm not one of them I'm not a networker. I don't sit here making phone call after phone call and trying to be in contact with everyone every day. I have people that I really hold their opinions in high regard and would talk to them about football for, you know, time after time. I think people like Chris Ramsey, who's head of player development now at QPR, was my coach here when I was an under 15, an under 16, and he's been someone that I have a lot of really interesting conversations with. Chris, more around individual player development than an actual team, but that's been someone that whose opinion I really do hold closely since I started coaching. Dean Smith, someone now in terms of the way he sets his team up, you know, what he tries to do, what he's trying to do, what he's doing at Aston Villa. How you go about the best ways of recruiting the best players and the type of people that you want to bring into your club. So I think that's he's someone, again, not that I speak to Dean hugely, but when I do, it's invaluable and he gives me some really interesting things to think about. Another Orient connection is Alex Inglethorpe, who's obviously got an incredible job at Liverpool now. His input and his understanding and how we think very similar about the game is also great for me as well. But like anybody, I think it's about being open-minded to what's out there. For me, I like to set my team up to try to replicate what the best teams, the best individuals in the game are trying to do. I don't set my team up to look like your bang average League Two team. I want them to try to win games of football but replicate very good football and try to entertain. My job is to put a balanced team out onto the pitch and try to get the best out of the players that we have here at the club. So we set up a system to make sure that we're difficult to play against. I think any manager will tell you, whether it's Pep Guardiola or Sam Allardyce, that you build your team on not conceding first and foremost. And I think that's something that I've learned about my team since I've been in the job, is when I first came in, it was about trying to win, and win again. And sometimes you have to readdress that and not leave yourself too open. So I think in recent games, I've discovered that we've looked a lot more solid and harder to break down, which pleases me. But then at the same time, what's come away from that is we haven't looked as much of a goal threat at the other end. But you know, you can only put these things into place and try to make sure that you give the group the best structure you can to go out and try to win games of football. And I try to do that from looking at what the best people do.
Right, and just one more off the message boards. What about set pieces? I think apart from direct free kicks, we've only had to score from a couple of headers from corners and free kicks all season. Presumably, like all other clubs, you do a lot of work on them.
Yeah, we do. And I think a lot of that was, you know, we obviously had a real success in the National League in terms of the amount of goals we scored from set pieces. I think what was interesting about that was we did next to no work at all on set pieces the year we won the league. I don't know if we ever did a session on set pieces. It was about, well, Justin's phrase was always delivery and desire to go and score. So I think that, you know, the simplistic view on that is that it is, if you've got real good deliverers, real good people putting good balls into the box, and then you've got people that want to go and score, they're the real basis of scoring from set pieces, because 9 times out of 10, you're doing it through bodies. A lot of bodies set up to try to prevent you from scoring. So without doubt, this season we haven't scored enough. We work on it a lot. We'll do a session on it tomorrow, and then we'll do another revisit on it on Friday, so that we've got our set pieces that we take into Saturday's game ready to go and try to use that as an element and an opportunity to score goals. But certainly it is another area that we need to develop.
Okay, Barry, just time for one more.
Yeah, just questions here, Ross. What would you say was the thing that you think you know now that you didn't know when you was an assistant manager? What do you think is the biggest thing you've learned about the difference between the two roles?
That when you win, the club and the players are fantastic, and when you lose, you are the worst human being in the world.
Nowhere to hide.
No, I think it's that. I think it's that when things are going well, that it's everybody involved at the whole club, and as it should be, by the way, like as it should be, it's everybody in it. We're all a club together. Everything's great. We're all working and moving in the right direction. Embrace, you know, the fact that things have gone well, or you've won, or you're on a good run, etc., etc. But when you lose, I am the lowest of the low. That's probably the one thing that I've learned. And I think what then that probably does for everybody is puts into perspective the fact that social media to me means absolutely nothing. That you have to be hard-skinned, even though I'm not coming into contact with everybody like I would do, you know, for the good or the bad at games every week. But that's the biggest thing that I've learned, is that there's no middle ground. If you don't win, you're a horrendous human being, and if you win, you don't get mentioned.
Yeah, such is football, mate. I don't have that opinion of it, Ross.
No, but look, I'm fine with it, Barry. It is what it is. Do you know what I mean? And I know that when I walk off the pitch on a Saturday and we win, that I'll have 47 text messages on my phone, Instagram messages, you know, wanting to get in touch to pat me on the back. And then when we lose, my missus will text me, my dad will phone me on the way home, and my brother will phone me the next day to have a chat and talk about something else other than football. And that's life. But like I say, that's the biggest thing that I've learned. When it's good, it's everyone. When it's not, I'm the worst.
True.
Barry, it is your job to give the man a pat on the back after Saturday's game, win, lose or draw, all right? We're holding to that.
Absolutely. If I could, Steve, obviously I'm not allowed to. Social distancing and all that. And every time I've been near Ross, and you won't mind me saying so, Ross, I've had to quarantine. Is that right? It is right, isn't it?
That's about right.
Yeah. It's true. Twice I've come to contact you in the last year. And twice I've been told, you've got to go home for 7 days or 10 days now. So thanks for that, mate.
That's all right. Anytime.
A virtual hug, maybe. Ross, thanks as ever. Frank, as ever, you know, I'm sure that everyone really wants the best for Leighton Orient. That's why we're all here. So up the O's, and best wishes to everyone for Saturday.
Thanks very much, Steve.
Well, that was Steve Tongue and Barry Galvin talking yesterday to Ross, and hopefully, by the miracles of modern science, Steve Tongue's on the end of the phone line now, Steve.
Hello, Andy, yes.
How are you?
Yes, very good, thank you.
Well, that was a mixed bag, I think, me and Darren are saying to each other here off mic from Ross. Some interesting comments made there. What was the standout moment for you there?
Well, just at one general point, first of all, I think, as you both said right at the start, and I'm sure Orient supporters are very used to hearing Ross over the last couple of years, appreciate his willingness to engage with us, to answer questions. He doesn't duck the questions. And I think we need to appreciate, too, that not all clubs and all managers by any means are like that these days. Anyone who's heard one or two of our opposition managers this season, I hope will realise that. So we do appreciate it, but also, you know, very good questions from the supporters in particular, much better than mine, and some very interesting stuff that came out. I mean, just... some people getting three sort of critical questions in a row like that would terminate the interview there and then. But far from just defending himself, as he's perfectly entitled to, and defending his tactics, I thought very interesting to hear Ross say that he actually agrees with some of that. That, for instance, we do build up too slowly at times. He's aware of that. He said openly, we don't create enough chances, and it sounds very much to me as if, although, as he said, they've been struggling just to get on a decent pitch to do any training in the last 3 weeks or so, it sounds to me, after those four games without a goal, they've been working on, as he said, being more aggressive, taking more risks, as he said, getting more balls into the box. So it would be very interesting to see.
It'd be nice to add shooting to that list, really, Steve.
Yes, that as well. That as well. It will be interesting to see if there's any effect of that on Saturday. Why does he keep playing 4-3-3? He said without any prompting that if he was able to choose, you know, a world 11 from his all available players or any old available players that Leighton Orient could afford, that he wouldn't necessarily play. In fact, he said, I wouldn't play 4-3-3. It wouldn't be his formation of choice, but that it suits the players we've got, which is you know, an example of a manager who, rightly or wrongly, decides that he will fit the players to the system. Fit the system to the players, and not just set on a system and try and force the players into it. I thought that was an interesting one. And just that last question of Barry's, very interesting. I mean, if we had more time, I might have said that it sounds as if some of that criticism really does get to him, particularly the reaction to a defeat that he was talking about. I mean, I hope he genuinely doesn't take too much notice of social media. In fact, I think it would be a good idea if managers in general, and certainly Ross, kept off social media altogether. But it was interesting, I thought, that he came out so strongly on that.
Yeah, Steve. Hi, it's Darren. Like you, I picked up on that, and like you, I'm on social media. And I don't see it. I think Ross is taking it to heart, if I'm honest. I think being described as the worst human being in the world, that's not what I see. That's certainly not. Yeah, there's always one or two individuals who have got it in for you from day one and will never give you a chance in life. And that goes before all of us in every job we ever do in life. But I don't see it, honestly. I've got, you're not trying to show off, I've got 1,200 followers on Twitter, and I think 700-800 of them are Orient fans. And I don't see that at all on my timeline. So I do think he's taking it personally, Steve. Yeah, I do. It's a shame.
The other thing we don't know is, of course, managers get letters and correspondence, don't they? Maybe even email these days. But we don't know what sort of stuff players and managers get through the post, do we? And some of that could be pretty unpleasant.
We know our fan base quite well, don't we, Steve? And we know that generally we're a pretty decent bunch. And there's always the odd one, of course there is, and I would like to think that, from what I'm seeing, the vast majority of people are on Ross's side, and we all want Ross to succeed, because if Ross succeeds, then we're a happy fan base, aren't we?
Yeah, and we almost, as he said, the number of different texts he gets when we win or when we lose, I think we almost see that on Facebook and Twitter and so on, that when we win, a certain group of supporters come on and stick up for Ross, and when we lose, a smaller anti-brigade come on. So that's the way it goes, and you know, I'm sure that's not unique to Leighton Orient by a very long way.
No, not by any stretch. The one I will say that I did find incredibly insightful, but I'll be honest, not probably in a positive way with Ross's concern, was his comments around other managers and the conversations around our strengths and weaknesses. Look, I have to be honest, I found that quite naive. I've been in business a long time, and the last thing I'm going to do is pick the phone up to one of my competitors and ask them to do a SWOT analysis on my strengths and weaknesses for anybody who is wondering what that means. But
I've got to say, Darren, you've got a fair point. I like Ross, I like him a lot, but on that particular point, I've got to say, you're going to be playing some of these people again this season. They're hardly going to turn around and say, oh, yeah, well, OK. Well, what we decided to do was we decided to hone in on, let's pick a left back, and we'll come down that channel there. And they're not going to tell you that. I mean, or if they do, they're not telling you the truth. I mean, it's not going to happen, is it? Yeah, I mean, you know, you should have people that you trust who are watching the game who give you their opinion of what they did. You know, where they honed in, although it should be pretty obvious by the result what they did.
What you want is constructive criticism from the Matt Harrolds and the Danny Senders, yeah, and the Dean Brill.
Yeah.
To pick the phone up to John Jens, is it? It's at Crawley?
Crawley, yeah. Yeah, say, a brave man to do that. No, he knows John, but yeah, even okay, so, yeah.
But yeah. I just think that was something that I found. Yeah. You and I looked at each other when we were listening to that.
Well, Steve, what did you make? He was there at the time.
Well, I was surprised, and because I was going to say that the people I've heard at a higher level, say Premier League managers saying that sort of thing in the days when they were allowed to all get together after a game and have a drink, you know, generally the visiting manager is invited in to have a drink, yeah, with the home team. And the one thing I've heard people say about that is that the one thing you don't talk about is the game. You've just played, unless particularly you both want to have a moan about the referee or something. So, no, it was surprising. But, the one example which he gave, which rang very true. He said he's heard opposing managers say that because the Orient players are very comfortable on the ball, they sit back in their own half and basically let us have it. I think there have been one or two notable occasions where they didn't do that, when they pressed us. Forest Green, I think, at home were very good at pressing us and closing us down, and it actually it made life much more difficult for us. But that may well be an example of something that they do say.
Yeah, can we go back to the start of that conversation, the Carlisle match? Now, you know, he was discussing the weather there, and it's a fast, Darren, isn't it? I mean, -3, and why are we even waiting? You know, we've got this situation where players are cooped up in a hotel room on their own now. Food's brought to their room. They don't have contact with anybody. It's terrible conditions for anyone, really. And why was the time wasted?
I'm a bit more sympathetic on that, Andy, personally. I feel that Carlisle did want to get the game on, and it was a bit of a no-win. The only thing I would say is the weather forecasts these days are incredibly accurate, aren't they?
Hmm.
You know, it's not like the old days when you and I were boys, and you literally didn't trust it, did you?
Well, it's 45% wrong, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's incredible. So I think what was, again, naive, if I keep using that word, was to not trust the weather forecast, frankly, and not somebody should have perhaps had the gumption to turn around and say, well, have you seen the weather forecast?
Yeah. I mean, it was a joke, Steve, wasn't it?
Well, yes, Ross described it as a debacle, and I'm sure everyone at our club was very upset about the whole thing. Nobody just mentioned the cost, but with a similar case going up to Barrow earlier in the season, we were told the overall cost was £7,000 of travel and hotels and so on. We heard from the club that they were hoping to get some of that back from either Carlisle or the EFL, but I think the chances of that would be pretty slim, to be honest. And as Ross said, it was not just the travel. It was just, you know, 2 days wasted, basically. And what the one good thing that I suspect came out of it was that they clearly said to Harrogate for the Saturday game, you know, we want an early decision, which came, to be fair to Harrogate, pretty early Friday morning, didn't it? And clearly stopped them travelling. So that was the good that came out of it.
Steve, Andy, one thing that Ross did say that actually really did resonate with me, and it come from Justin, was about set pieces. I've been a believer of this for some time, actually, that the practice on set pieces, whilst I'm not going to say it doesn't do any good at all, I think with all due respect, and I mean this with most respect, players at League Two level, they're not going to deliver the ball in the same spot every time. And that's why I don't think that set piece training and drills are perhaps as vital at League Two as they are higher up the divisions. So it was actually really caught my caught me that was about delivery, desire, and delivery, and that was something I thought was, you know, fair play if we're carrying on that mantra. To what did you guys think of that?
Yes, it was a great line of Justin's, delivery and desire, wasn't it? And I was surprised to hear that we never practiced them at all. I mean, many of my images of our National League season were Josh Coulson up for corners, and I mean, was it Aldershot away? He got two, didn't he, in the same match? But we've seen very little of that. In fact, I did just check, and I think apart from those direct free kicks, which are something different that Joby and Wilco got, I think it's only the two successive games, home to Harrogate, where Danny Johnson was suddenly left all alone at the far post and actually headed in a corner. Not a man you'd expect to be our top player in the air because of his height, but he got that one. And then in the very next game, which was Bradford, who we play next week, of course, a very good free kick by JMD from out on the right wing. And Dan Happy got up, if you remember, and headed that. And those are, the only two set-piece goals apart from those direct free kicks. But, yes, you're right. I think we also heard at some stage that Joby, when he was coaching more than playing, was doing a bit of work with the players on it, and he seems to be the main man on a lot of them, certainly from the left-hand side. But you're right, I was thinking about it when Ross was talking about it, I don't remember many occasions when you, what the commentators call, or a training ground move there, don't see many sort of sudden moves, clearly thought out, different players going different places. It seems to be most of the time just an in-swinging corner kick. I think young Dan Kemp has been on a few of them in the last couple of games and has actually not been very successful with them so far. So him or James Brophy taking an in-swinging kick from the right-hand side, or Joby doing the same from the left. Bo, interesting to see if that's something that we can improve on, because it is a comparatively poor record this season.
Our horses for courses, though, Steve. I mean, we were in the non-league when, you know, we didn't bother with these things, but now we're back in the full-time football and an improved standard. You would have think that set pieces would be back on the menu, wouldn't you?
I think the reason for that, Andy, is that in the National League, it's very, very well known that set pieces make a big difference. I think the higher up the pyramid you go, the players' concentrations levels are better. So therefore, you're not expecting your centre-half to lose his centre-forward quite as often. So therefore, there are not so many goals are coming from set pieces. So I give a little bit of licence, if that's the right word. The other sort of surprising comment that I found a little bit, I don't want to use the word excuse-making, but I can't think of a better one, was this about up the hill. Steve, that they mentioned about the quality of playing up the hill, I think they called it.
Yeah, I think really it was just saying that the team generally have got in the habit, most teams and most divisions have a favourite end to attack, don't they? I think he was just saying that they've got in the habit of preferring to attack the south stand, which is why you notice when we win the toss, we normally always kick towards the north stand first. Nice. And once or twice, I think opposing teams have cottoned onto that and have made us play the other way, like you do when you go to Liverpool. If you win the toss, you make them play towards the crop in the first half instead of the second half, and so on. I think that was the only
okay. Maybe I was reading too much into it.
I think so. I think that was the only point he was making. And again, I haven't done the statistics, but he may well be right that over the course of the last couple of seasons, we have scored more goals going down going towards the south stand.
Now, we know the weather's been bad, Steve, but I think that was a bit of a surprise. 3 to 4 weeks, they haven't trained on grass.
Yes. I think he mentioned briefly when he was talking about that I assume that they would have got on some artificial pitches. But Ross said when it's actually snow on top of the something like a 3G or 4G pitch, you can't just sweep the snow away, because anybody who's played on those sort of pitches know all those terrible little black bits that you get in your trainers at the end of the game. They basically all come out if you try to sweep the snow away and ruins the pitch. So
That's been a tricky one. He also said it may have been, just when we were talking beforehand, that they've been to one or two other places in Hertfordshire, I think he said, when the weather was very slightly better there. They've obviously been doing a bit of work phoning around and just...
Where town they were training at? Where?
That's right, where. Yes, not quite as bad as those of us ancient enough to remember 1962 to 63, when I think we didn't play from Boxing Day until well into February almost. And I think you probably just gave up any hope of doing anything at all. And in those days, people might have seen some of the famous old pictures of the amount of snow on the pitch and one or two optimistic players with brooms trying to get rid of it in those days. But, well, also I believe the weather is set. Well, it's getting better in London the last couple of days, isn't it? And I think the weather's quite set fair for the weekend, all being well.
Well, on a slightly another subject, I really don't know why we persist with this playing at the end of January, because we have bad weather in the UK at the end of every January. To me, if we're going to have a break ever, that's the time to do it. But that's just another subject for another day, perhaps, and another show.
Yes. I don't think our lads will be off to Dubai, but they might appreciate. Well, they've had a little break, haven't they? And what have we got now? Three midweek games in succession, three Tuesday nights in succession. Yeah. So we're back in the old Tuesday, Saturday, and imagine that the worst of the weather is behind us, and now we'll be complaining about not having enough training time and not having enough preparation time.
So, any little snippets for the coming weekend, Steve?
Well, Port Vale, my friend who's a Port Vale fan, is very despondent. They're on a terrible run, bottom six at the moment, and as Ross said, appointed a new manager, and he said he was rather surprised that Daryl Clark has left Walsall for Port Vale. But when we played them at the end of November, I think that was their fifth successive defeat. And then they went to Bolton and scored six away to Bolton, just to yet another illustration of what a mad division we're in. Sacked the manager in January. And since then, the only two teams they've beaten are Southend and Grimsby, who've both been right down the bottom. So they've only won two out of 12. Got, I think, four or five players in the transfer window. But if it wasn't for the new manager factor, I think we'd be pretty optimistic going into this game. However, as we know, there's generally a bounce for a new manager. The players all want to impress him. The ones who've been out of the team will be trying harder in training, and they want to impress him as well. They'll all be busting a gut, and so it's not the ideal fixture ever, really, to play a team with a new manager. But they're an interesting team. They scored 40 goals, which is six more than the O's. They do things like losing 4-3 quite often, but they've conceded 43, which is about the fourth worst in the league. So although I imagine some of our supporters after the last couple of games are saying they wouldn't mind a few 4-3 games, you know, if you lose a 4-3 game, then you end up where they are in the bottom six. So I think probably not a goalless draw is what I'd suggest.
Am I right in saying, Steve, they lost Tuesday night, didn't they? They lost last night.
No, they didn't play, actually.
They did not play.
I mean, look at... I don't know if people saw all last night's results, but it's such a mad division. There were two teams just below us who could have gone above us, Walsall and Crawley. Walsall lost at home to Cheltenham. Crawley managed to lose at home to Stevenage.
Yeah, I saw that, and you're
extraordinary.
Right. It's
the teams just above us, Carlisle lost, Morecambe lost... Exeter had two players sent off in the first half, so they had to play for 45 minutes away to Newport with nine men, and they got a draw, and Newport only equalised in the last couple of minutes. I think it was the Tuesday we were due at Carlisle, if you remember that one. I think three of the top four teams played at home and all lost. Well, one of them lost to Southend and one of them lost again to Stevenage. So it's just a mad division.
You're right. And I was looking at the league table after last night's results and seeing that we've played 27 games with 5 points adrift at the playoffs. But what my concern is we've got one win in five. We need a result Saturday and we need a win.
Because there is a little 4-point gap ahead of us now. People have been saying, oh, well, those teams below us, they'll catch us up when they play all their games in hand. Well, they play them, basically. Crawley are the only team who can catch us if they win their one game in hand, and they'd have to win that by four goals. So although there is a little clutch of clubs below us, who we don't want to catch us, we are still in touch, which is remarkable. I mean, to be honest, we shouldn't really be as high as 10th place, but all the teams have been winning are the teams down the bottom and nearer us.
It's a team that can put four or five wins together, Steve, isn't it? Like, anyone can do
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, yeah, and when we've done it, three wins in a row, we've then gone on and three losses or not won one in four or whatever.
Well, we're a Jekyll and a Hyde team in a Jekyll and Hyde league, aren't we?
Yes, that sums it up pretty well. And well, I think it goes, as I've been saying, I think it goes for most teams. I mean, Carlisle, to be fair to them, and the reason they were desperate to get the games on is, you know, they've played five games less than Cambridge, who are top. If Carlisle, never mind won all their games in hand, if they just kept up their average points per game, they would basically be the league leaders. So it's a bit up and down. And Bradford, where we go next Tuesday, who Ross briefly mentioned, they're one of those within 4 points of us. They were right down the bottom. They won, I think, 6 out of 9. So they're
right
up there, 16th or so. Yeah.
Steve, we're going to have to bail you out, my friend, and say thanks very much for joining us.
Pleasure.
And we're going to leave you with a rather special ending, different ending to the show tonight. Thanks, Darren.
Thanks, Andy.
We're a small family at Leighton Orient, aren't we? And we know so many of each other, either by name or by face. And that has sort of compounds the misery of the past few weeks since the turn of the year, with so many supporters, it seems, leaving us far too soon. And every few days we pick up a message that somebody known to us has passed away, and that really has been like a dagger to the heart of all of us. We're such a small club, it's such a small family of people, and this family really has been hit very hard over recent weeks with losses. We'll just read out the names of the people that we know of that have left us far too soon this year alone. And we pause to remember at the end of this week's show those that are no longer with us. Brian Church, who left us on the 6th of January. Dennis McCrombie on the 19th of January. Former player Malcolm Slater on the 23rd of January. And long-standing supporter Eric Golding on the 29th of January. Simon Fellman and James Kelman on the 5th of February. George Alexander, Gary Alexander's father, on the 6th of February. Darren Barker on the 12th of February. And just this week, well-known supporter Gary McCallum on the 15th of February. Going to Orient won't be the same without those faces around. And each person was somebody's world. And we mourn their loss and we think of their families at this time. And we pause at the end of this programme to remember those that we've lost. Good night, everybody.